97.1 FM Talk Podcast. This hour of the Mark Reardon Show is sponsored by Gamma Tree Experts. Your trees deserve the best care. Call Gamma Tree Experts. This is the Mark Reardon Show on 97.1 FM Talk.
Well, good Tuesday afternoon, St. Louis, as we, I think, enjoy a pretty nice summer day. It's not bad out there. I went out to the BMW Championship already this morning, and I think it was a good sign that I wasn't sweating my you-know-what off, because it could be pretty hot. How's everyone in here today, Sue? How are you?
I'm great. It was a good day for a bike ride.
Yeah, the weather is, it's nice. I mean, compared to last week, the dew points and the humidity, you can actually, you know, be out in the sun and not just completely sweat. But I was walking around the grounds quite a bit today, so as it got a little closer to 1 o'clock, it was getting hotter. Fred, everything going well here? He's holding down the fort.
You know what? It was great this morning around 6:30 a.m. for a dog walking. No sweating at all.
I know, that's even nice. Better. I went out to Belrive this morning just to kind of check out the setup and the lay of the land. I saw the Clydesdales arrive. Those
nice.
Horses are so impressive. They're so big and beautiful. I used to ride my bike a lot by Grant's Farm, and I would see, on Grant's Trail, I'd see them. But it's been a while since I've, seen them in person, because I don't usually end up at opening day now that I'm not on KMOX, but they're just majestic, and it was really cool. I ran into Ozzy before the opening ceremony, and he was all dressed up nicely. Aww. Because he got to hold the trophy. So after the Clydesdales arrived, and, there's this little roundabout right at the beginning of the entrance of Belrive, and they stopped there, and Ozzy took the trophy, and he was introduced and did some things. He's playing in the Pro-Am tomorrow. I asked him if he knew who he was playing with. He said he did not, but he's a great golfer. I've actually played with Ozzy before, and he loves the sport, and I know he's excited about this week. Look, there is a special feeling out there, and I know a lot of you might not be into golf, but this is an amazing event for St. Louis.
No, it is.
You have 50 of the top golfers on the planet. I was out on the range quite a bit this morning. Rory McIlroy was on the range a lot. I mean, he even said last week after the tournament, because he had taken a few weeks off, he said he felt lost. Well, he was trying to get through that feeling, I think, today on the range, because he was chipping and hitting. I didn't see him hit driver at all today, but a lot of chips, other wedges, and then he had to be hitting a 7 or 8 iron a while, because he was crushing that more than 200 yards. I had a chance. It was funny. Ludwig Åberg, you see these guys on TV and you don't know what their personality's like.
Right.
And he comes off the range, and I'm actually trying to be careful here with what the rules are. Like, I don't want to bother the players when I'm not supposed to bother the players. I'm not someone who regularly covers golf, so I'm rather cautious with where I can go and where I can't go. Like, I can't go inside the ropes. Dan Reardon can go inside the ropes, I think, with his credential, which is, you can walk right alongside the players. So this guy, and I don't know who he was, he was from New Jersey, but he said, "Hey, Ludwig, can I just ask you a question about golf in different countries, like give you a quiz?" So what he did was he quizzed him on the top 10 countries, golf course, the number of golf courses in the top 10 countries. So in other words, the U.S., I'll give you a little example. The U.S. is number one. All right, we have like 16,000 golf courses. So he asked Ludwig to name the top 10. That's a lot of places, right?
Yeah.
So he's sitting there. I almost felt bad for the guy. He's going through, and he's hitting and missing, and he's from Sweden, and he forgot to say Sweden at first, so he got that in there at the end. But I told him after, I'm like, dude, that might be tougher than the championship this week, because he was really put on the spot. But he could not have been a nicer guy. They
Good.
Have a great area for the kids where the players come off the range, and they walk to the clubhouse, and the autographs that the kids can get right there kind of keep the adults out of that. The merch tent is just unbelievable. It's really kind of amazing. So I'm all geeked up about it, and it's going to be fun this week. And I know Dan Reardon's going to join us a little bit later in the afternoon. And I am going to take Thursday and Friday off because of the tournament. Coming up today, Fred, I don't even know. We're not quite at closing arguments in the Lindsey Clancy case,
are we? No, not closing yet. But defense is still making
the defense
case.
Is making the case. This is the woman who you know, strangled her children. It's an awful, awful case, but there's postpartum depression and other issues related to mental illness that are involved. And we're going to have a psychiatrist and someone who knows a lot about these psychiatric meds, which unfortunately I do too, coming up here in just a little bit. Dan O'Donnell, it's been a while. You know, it's funny. Dan is a friend from Milwaukee, and he did a morning radio show for many years, like 9 to noon on WISN. We worked together at WTMJ. I love Dan. He actually has a law degree. He never practiced law, super smart guy, but they moved him to afternoons on WISN when somebody retired. And Fred, it's harder for us to get him on the air, but we're lucky this afternoon we have a bit of a window with him. He's going to join us because there was this crazy, and we were just talking about this with Paul Hall. The Wisconsin State Fair is awesome. I went like, you know, 9 years in a row. I did my show out there when I was in Milwaukee. We were just kind of bragging about it last week because Paul Hall was talking about going out to see an act at the Wisconsin State Fair. It's unique too because it's an urban, more of an urban state fair. It's not in the actual city of Milwaukee. It's on the fringes, if you will, but it's not like 150 miles away, like Sedalia, or even Springfield, Illinois. So they had one of these teen takeovers at the grounds of the state fair. It's just awful. And I mean, let's just be honest. It wasn't a teen takeover. It was a black teen takeover. So he's going to relate on that and talk a little bit about Francesca Hong and the other things that are happening in Wisconsin. We have Sue's News in the next hour, of course. Jacob Olidor is going to be with us from the First Policy Institute, America First Policy Institute, talking about the latest with the memo of understanding passing and why we're being extremely patient with Iran. Batya Angar-Sargon, the host of Batya on News Nation, will be here as well. And then it's Tech Talk Tuesdays with George, and there's all kinds of stuff to talk about. I mean, it's funny. He gives Fred a list, right? There's five topics. I bet we don't even get to two because there's so much. There is so much that's involved there. So
plus, we have to put in time to be horrified. Well, whatever it is he says.
No, that's right. So a couple of things that I wanted to touch on here because of the women that went to the game the other night and were told in Atlanta to cover up their XXXY shirts. So the mom and the daughter who this happened to, they were on with Laura Ingraham last night.
He didn't know what was offensive about it. He said he didn't even understand, but since someone told on us and said that they were offensive, we had to, you know, cover up, put on our, you know, our Atlanta Dream shirts instead of our XXXY.
I was flabbergasted. It's the first time I've ever experienced anything like that, and I had no words except, like, who's offended by a t-shirt at this point?
Yeah. And who is offended by science? That's what we asked the security guard.
Yeah, that's the better question, actually. Who is offended by science? It's outrageous that this happened. Now, the WNBA has said that it shouldn't have happened, right? Well, it did happen. And, you know, you have a coach that wore Trans Rights Matter on the side, like, for the whole game. And somehow, you know, there was a kid that said, you know, I think the kid that had the trans rights shirt complained about these women with the XXXY, but it's just outrageous. Here's Jen Say, who runs that company, XXXY.
Well, I would say it's a pretty weak apology from the WNBA. They said this should not have happened. They didn't say we instructed security guards to do so, which I'm pretty sure happened. There are reports at this point that shirts with the sort of opposite message, trans kids belong, that they were also asked to cover up. I just want to say from my perspective, though, obviously that's my shirt. I'm wearing it now. I think everybody should wear whatever they want, and they should be able to say whatever they want. They aren't hurting anybody. This is a T-shirt. If you believe that women's sports should be protected like I do, that men and women are different, wear the shirt. It's a symbol for fair competition. If you believe the other side of things, I'm fine with it. Wear your shirt. The WNBA needs to stay out of it. But they're trying to control the messaging, I think. And the more they attempt to control it and suppress our message, the more support we get for our side. Because the censors, let's face it, are never the good guys.
Well, Jen is absolutely right about that. And I said that yesterday. Look, if that person wants to wear the trans rights shirt, go for it. I don't care. I'm not going to stop you. I'm not going to call for you to have that covered up. And to even request, I don't know, what could be going through a security guard's mind? Now, that's why I think Jen's right. I think the league has something. There's no way that a rogue security guard goes over there and does that. That's very difficult for me to believe. Somebody had to get involved with that. And, you know, I mentioned the Lynx coach in her shirt.
Absolutely. I was at that game in Minneapolis where she wore that shirt. I could see the Jumbotron. Every person they cut to basically had a shirt on that said, "Trans kids belong." No one's talking about that. We're not protecting women's sports. They're trying to manufacture a consensus that doesn't exist. There is a groundswell of support from normies who know that men and women are different and women deserve their own sports. And the WNBA is trying to control it, and they can't. And at this point, they just look ridiculous, frankly. Stand
they do.
Up and do what the WNBA has done, what the IOC has done, and say you're going to protect women's basketball and that it should be for women only. It's not hard.
No, it's not hard, but it's hard for the WNBA because of the Alphabet Mafia and their players and even their coaches who are radicals. So there's a delicate balancing act here, and I love it right now. I love the way this is playing out because something eventually is going to have to be final when it comes to policy. You have more players coming out, more and more players who are declaring for the WNBA draft. I think there's 6 or 7 at this point. 8, Fred? Yeah, 8.
Yeah, and so, it says there's 8.
Right, it's a growing movement.
I think women generally are lead cancelers. They've been the leaders in cancel culture. They tend to, I think, seek cohesion in their groups, and they perceive the in-group message as allowing trans-identified men to compete in women's sports. And that the fact is that's not true. We're the majority. And I think once women see that, I mean, liberal women, we're our own worst enemy. I don't put myself in that group, but you know what I mean. Yeah. But I think once they see that the culture has moved the other way, and that they're actually on the wrong side of the issue, they're going to go that way too.
But I think so too, and I think a lot of people have gone that way. Look, I think that it's the whole Minnesota Lynx coach, the Seattle Storm owner, they're in the minority. Like, wait, when it comes to the country, when it comes to fans of the WNBA, they're in the way, way in the minority. Why? This is what I said yesterday. Why they want this, you know, to be the hill that they die on is really amazing to me. And they're missing an opportunity because the eyes of the country are on the WNBA. And I think they're missing, you know, great, great chances to do something positive here and talk about the league. Look, come out with your statement. Say, this is what we're going to do. We're going to play basketball. And men are not going to play basketball against women. But they can't do it, can they? We're trying to cover a little bit more at the end here of the Lindsay Clancy trial. This is the mom who, well, it's not even in doubt. She strangled her children. But the defense is that she was in a psychotic break after postpartum depression. Here is her own mother testifying.
I believe I remember Pat asking her if she felt like she couldn't be alone with the children, and she said no.
And after she made those statements, did you have any thoughts about committing her?
No.
Were you concerned for the children's safety at that point in time?
No, because I was there.
Okay, so there's been testimony about a lot of different medications that Lindsay Clancy was on.
You're actively trying to help her kind of figure out the medication.
Yes, there were a lot of medications.
That is her mother-in-law testifying.
Mostly she had insomnia. She was losing her appetite. She was very anxious and sad. She was begging for help.
Look, you know, unfortunately, and I think a lot of you know this, there's a lot of relatability that I have here, not in a postpartum way, but because I was, you know, in desperate need of help last summer after being, you know, thrown back into this depression and anxiety that I had 12, 13 years ago. And, you know, I missed eight weeks of work last year at this time. This was right about the time I was getting back here. But so the medications and the list of medications, unfortunately for me, are somewhat relatable. But Dr. Yosef Wittering is with us. He's a psychiatrist, CEO, and medical director of Taper Clinic. He's going to kind of talk through this situation with this trial in Massachusetts and the medication. Dr. Wittering, how are you? Thanks for coming on 97.1 FM Talk in St. Louis.
Hey, Mark. Great to be here.
So I have a technical diagnosis of bipolar 2. And, you know, just quickly, I had really bad anxiety and depression 2014. Got on some meds that helped me. Didn't think I, you know, saw the light, was saved. Last year, got thrown back into this again. Had to, you know, change some medication, and I was fine. But I know the torture that is mental illness. Now, that's a little different than strangling your old children, right? But what would you say, just on the postpartum issue here, with the claim that this was a psychotic incident related to the medications?
Yeah, so Where that comes from is actually Lindsay's testimony and what her husband and mother have said. So the when someone takes the lives of their children, we don't normally say, oh, they were in a psychosis. We look for an alternative explanation. So generally speaking, we look for something like, hey, you know, was an affair going on? Was this some kind of revenge killing? She found out her husband was cheating, and so she wanted to take her life and the kids. Now, there was nothing of the sort in this case, and that's why it's captivated the nation, because so many people are wondering, why did she do this and how did this happen? Now, when you look at Lindsay's testimony and also the medical records, what becomes really clear is that she, you know, as you mentioned, she has this severe insomnia, but she also starts having bad auditory hallucinations. And so this happens right at the end, and she also reports having thoughts of wanting to harm her children. Now, all of this is happening in the context of getting put on more and more medication,
right,
which are making her worse and worse. And so when people have put all of this together, particularly her defense, it really looks like she was having a postpartum psychosis or a drug-induced psychosis, because outside of those explanations, there really isn't anything else that makes a lot of sense other than what the prosecution is trying to argue, which is that she's essentially a psychopath and that she did this in a calculated way. But everything about her history and who she is and what people are saying about her as a mother and as a person doesn't match up with that at all.
Well, and so this is an interesting case for me, because I'll just be honest with you. I think I would have a much different reaction and different interpretation had I not gone through the experiences that I've gone through. And by the way, am on some of the same medications like Lamictal and quetiapine that Lindsay Clancy was on. So I understand the side effects, the risks, all this stuff. Again, never to the point where I felt like I was going to harm myself or others. But to your point, there seems to be an ample amount of testimony that this psychotic episode was real, right?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, and there is a lot of testimony. And also, there's a lot of testimony that the medications were making her worse. You know, Mark, as you know, these medications can be very helpful for some people, and a lot of people take them. And something that does happen in rare circumstances is that the drugs can actually make some people worse.
Right.
Some people just genetically just do not respond to them well. And when you look at what happened with Lindsay, you know, from the first drug she was put on, which was Zoloft, it immediately gave her insomnia. And she has a bipolar diagnosis. That's what the defense is putting forward. And you're not supposed to put someone with bipolar on SSRIs, because it can cause manic episodes, and a feature of which is psychosis. And so you have this history where she gets put on the Zoloft, she gets worse, they double the dose, she gets even worse, they wait a couple of weeks, they put her on fluoxetine, another SSRI, she gets worse. And just again and again, she gets put on massive doses of antipsychotic. That doesn't work. Her husband goes in to see the doctor and essentially pleads with the doctor, saying, she's getting worse and worse on these mm-hmm. medications. Can we take them off? Can we try something else? They don't listen to him. They add more medications. And ultimately, the day before she takes the lives of her children and tries to take her own life, they're still doing the same thing with amitriptyline, another antidepressant, even though she's failed two previously and they've made her worse. And so there's also this medical record that is very suspect for drug-induced worsening as well.
What do you mean by that? Explain that a little bit.
So, when someone wants to plead the drugs made me do it defense, whether it's school shooting or something like that, you have to say, well, you know, what are the alternative explanations? Like, is this just someone trying to hide behind the drugs to get out of culpability?
Okay. Right.
Yeah. But if you have a medical record where there's multiple different physicians who are documenting that the meds are making them worse, and multiple people who are saying that the meds are making them worse, it doesn't look like a post hoc cooked up story where someone's trying to justify their behavior. You know, it's kind of documented down. And so that's why it's, I think she has a quite a strong chance of being found not guilty by reason of insanity from a drug-induced psychosis.
I think so, too. Now, you're the director of something called the Taper Clinic, and you help patients kind of taper off these psychiatric meds, right?
Yes.
So who are candidates for that? You know, some of this is a personal question. I'm on a certain amount of meds right now. I wish I didn't have to be on them. I feel like after last summer, I do. But again, I think a lot of us who take anti-anxiety or antidepressants wish we wouldn't have to. I have unfortunately discovered that I apparently do have to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so most of the people I see are folks who have been on medications for a long time. They're not anti-med. In fact, many of them report that the drugs have been very therapeutic and very helpful. But as many people listening may be aware, these drugs, they can wear off over time, and there's also, they also have a lot of side effects.
Yes.
You know, sometimes it can be weight gain. Sometimes there's some tiredness, some loss of motivation. And over time, these things can compound, and they can really affect people. And a lot of the people that come to the Taper Clinic are folks who are saying, you know, I like this med, it was helping me, but I want to try and find something else. And there are a lot of non-drug approaches for mental health problems. A lot of it has to do with weight loss, with dietary interventions, with movement. And sadly, in our current medical system, we don't provide people a lot of support to do that because we don't have the time. And so what the Taper Clinic does is we use all of the evidence-based non-drug interventions for mental illness and do it with coaching, keep people accountable, help them implement them well, and then we try and bring their medications down. And with many of our patients, we get them off, but with some of them, we just find a lower dose that's more sustainable.
Well, that makes sense. That's good. I love it. And again, I hope that I'm in that position someday. But Dr. Wittering, thank you so much. This was amazing insight into this trial, and we're going to see where this jury takes us here in the next week or so. But I appreciate you coming on this afternoon. You were under high recommendation by our friend Paul Morrow, and he was not wrong. So thanks for your expertise.
My pleasure, Mark. Great talking to you.
Okay, take care. You know, what's funny is I was just talking about the Wisconsin State Fair with Paul Hall on Friday because he's up in Milwaukee, and it's such a great event. I went many years. I talked about how I broadcasted live from that state fair when I worked for WTMJ Radio, but this is audio of, well, what they say are teenagers. I would say there's a descriptor that's missing here because these are mostly African-American teenagers. And it's just sad what has happened. You know, we see this here in St. Louis, and it happened at the State Fair in Wisconsin. My friend Dan O'Donnell, who does radio at WISN, is with me this afternoon. We used to work together many years ago. What the hell, Dan? The State Fair is like a family place. It's usually pretty calm and fun. There's rides, there's ice cream, there's milk. But not last weekend, huh?
No. And in fact, it was the very last day, and within the last 2 hours of the fair being open, it just completely descended into chaos. And Mark, believe it or not, this is not the first time that this has happened. In fact, back in 2011, almost exactly 15 years ago, this was on opening day of the fair. Again, you had huge mobs of Black teenagers running through the fair, and in that instance, they were deliberately attacking white people who were sitting in their cars as they were trying to leave the fair, as it was kind of closing, and just pulling them out and pummeling them. This one just appeared to be running through the Midway arcade and ride area, and they were just sort of fighting and going crazy as much as they possibly could. And this has actually been going on all summer in Milwaukee. I don't know about St. Louis or anywhere else across.
No, we've had a lot of these street takeovers and stuff like that. You know, where I am, Dan, downtown from where I'm located here down to the Arch, we've had, you know, a fair amount of the teen takeovers. And, you know, you can't drive in the city of St. Louis, Dan, and not see burnouts in the middle of an intersection. Almost every intersection.
Has Milwaukee, got too.
Right.
Yep.
Right. Exactly.
Yep. It's been all summer because what's been going on, I suspect the common denominator here is you have got a liberal Democrat power structure in St. Louis, as in Milwaukee.
Right.
That's just totally fine with this. Totally fine with this. I mean, you know, it's just like, oh, well, that's part and parcel of living in a big city. We had on 4th of July, downtown Milwaukee, you actually had people in the Walgreens parking lot down on Brady Street, which is a big bar entertainment district. You're very familiar with it, having lived here. They were shooting fireworks at police officers. as they were responding to the scene. I mean, this isn't like, oh, well, you know, if they just had more midnight basketball and something to do. These are people who are deliberately going to public places to cause mayhem, to cause chaos. And you simply cannot avoid the racial aspect of this.
I agree.
Because they are going to specifically white-attended places. The point, and we've got a couple of advertisements for these teen takeover events where they say, hey, let's go, you know, get in white people's faces at such and such event. Now, a lot of these get shut down when police officers learn about them. But if they go viral and way too many, you know, people come and just go crazy as they did at State Fair on Sunday night, they just overwhelm law enforcement.
And let me give you an example. Dan O'Donnell is here. He's a friend from Milwaukee, does a show on WISN Radio. So a couple of months ago, earlier in the summer, at one, you know, the Sky Zone places, the you know, trampoline parks, et cetera. Yeah. So there's one that my daughter goes to on a pretty much regular basis, and they had advertised some sort of 6-7 party. I guess it was on June 7th.
Of course.
And so they advertised it, and there were like 300, 350 kids, mostly black kids, that were outside of Sky Zone because they were at capacity indoors. So, Dan, they weren't letting these kids in. They went nuts. They basically took over an entire shopping center. The businesses in the, you know, in the shopping center had to close down. The police were outmanned. It was just crazy. Now, here's the other thing about it. This is the one thing that folks around here might remember. There was a girl, so this is actually kind of west of downtown area, right? There's a girl up in North County, which is a little bit more socioeconomically challenged and more African Americans, right? She sees this action on social media, which is 25 miles away. And she decides that it's a good idea at 12 years old to grab a knife and get in an Uber and ride to Shrewsbury because I guess she wanted to get involved in the fight. I mean, how crazy is that?
This is evidence, I'm sorry, of civilizational decay.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I hate to say it, but you've got, I mean, when we were growing up, certainly the farthest you could go is as far as you could get on your bike before the lights came on, the street lights came on, you had to be home for dinner. But I mean, let's you know, the more people kind of beat around the bush on this, I have a daughter who's 12 years old. She could not even conceptualize getting a knife, riding her bike, getting a ride 20 miles away to join a brawl.
I know.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's like, this is just so foreign to so many people in this country.
And I don't know how you fix it.
Yet we have inner city African-American teenagers, young adults, who are drawn to and want to be chaos agents, like to just cause as much socially deviant behavior as they possibly can. I don't know, truly. Mark, you know, we've been talking, oh, well, it's the decline of the family. It's the decay of the family. And yeah, that's a big part of it. But you've got people from one particular socioeconomic and racial demographic. And that's the thing. Like, socioeconomics, there are no poor white kids, Hispanic kids, Asian kids. Like, why is this so attractive in the black community?
And it needs to be addressed. It's never addressed. We talk about it all the time. And then, you know, people get hurt, unfortunately. Dan O'Donnell up in Milwaukee, WISN Radio. All right, I got to ask you, because I was so praying, Dan, and I didn't know much about her. You know, the rest of the country didn't really know much about Francesca Hong until a couple of weeks ago. And I was so hoping that Democrats in Wisconsin would elect her to make you know, the midterms maybe go a lot easier for Republicans across the country. But damn it, Dan, she got beat out in the last, you know, hours. I don't know about you, but I think if all that national attention would not have gone on her, I think she might have won. What, do you think that's accurate or not?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. The fact that she did those Fox News and CNN interviews where she revealed herself to just be a complete moron.
Right, right. Exactly.
It was the Thanksgiving tweet was one thing. But if you can go on and say, look, you know, I worked in the restaurant business. Holidays are always stressful. Yes, I do believe that Thanksgiving represents a checkered past of America. But yes, I realize that what we celebrate is giving thanks to all that we have. And there's an easy way. She couldn't do it. So after that, it was just a complete feeding frenzy. And I suspect, I don't really have evidence, but I suspect that Democrats were handing off the Francesca Hong Oppo file to national conservative influencers.
It might have been.
TikTok, yeah. All of that. Yeah. To just ensure that this stuff gets out, because Democrats in Wisconsin, they were terrified to directly go after Francesca Hong because they need those socialist crazies to vote for them. And the fear is that with David Crowley, who's just as left wing, I mean, I unearthed just yesterday a 2019 bill that he co-authored that would have forced tampons in every men's bathroom in the state. Okay. So it's not like this guy is like some sort of blue dog moderate Democrat. But next to Francesca, he's at least sane or appears to be sane. So Democrats refuse to go after her because they need her socialist voters to vote for the quote unquote corporate Dems that they hate even more than Republicans. So I don't think people understand, Mark. This is a civil war. The socialists, the DSA, they want a hostile takeover of the Democratic Party, and they're not going to stop it. Until it's
yeah,
done.
Yeah, no, you're right. So just, because we were talking about this here, and I hadn't talked to you in a while, David Crowley, the Milwaukee County executive, he had kind of pulled out of the race, right?
Yeah. He was polling at 5%, and about, I would say, 3 weeks before the primary on August 11th, he dropped out because he had no support. He endorsed our Lieutenant Governor, Sarah Rodriguez.
Right.
Literally 3 days later, she's forced to fire her campaign manager. Massive campaign finance scandal.
Oh, wow. You guys, I didn't hear about that. I did not hear about that.
She claimed she had like $1.5 million in the bank, was making a big, she makes this huge splash. Oh, yes, $1 million ad buy ahead of the primary. Turns out she had $35,000 in the bank. Like, it had all been a lie. The working theory is that the campaign manager, a woman named Kara Spencer, who has been convicted of, she was convicted in the early 2000s in Michigan of, I believe it was credit card fraud and using somebody else's bank card. Everywhere she goes, she just doesn't pay rent. She doesn't pay car payments.
That's a good deal if you can get it. Wow.
Oh, it was huge. It was huge. So
Sarah
Rodriguez was forced to drop out. And then Crowley, because Democrats were so desperate, he jumps back in. That's not all, Mark. That's not all. Our former lieutenant governor, Senate candidate who ran against Ron Johnson in 2022, Mandela Barnes.
Right.
He was going to pull votes away from Crowley. Democrats had compiled an opposition research dossier on him, allegedly doing untoward things with women. They threatened to release it unless he drops out
and
of the
he
race.
Pulled out.
He drops out of the race. They release part of it to the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel anyway. They blackmailed the guy out of the race like a week and a half before the primary. Oh, this has been
one
of the most.
Wow.
Insane,
you guys got a lot going on.
Underhanded. Oh, it's been crazy.
All right. So listen, I'm short on time, but I got to ask you one more question here. Tom Tiffany, can he beat Crowley, though? Do you think that that's,
absolutely.
Okay. All right. Good. That's good. Second question, rapid fire. And I say this seriously here. Are the Brewers going to win the World Series?
Boy, oh boy.
It's your year, man.
That one-two punch of the Miz and Henderson. I mean, everybody, right? If it's the NLDS, and it's the Brewers and Dodgers, even a diehard Cardinals fan would root for the Brewers.
For the Brewers,
right?
Yeah.
I mean, we're fighting the evil empire here. We're like Luke Skywalker going up against the Emperor Palpatine.
Well, I'm all on board. Here's the deal. The Cardinals kind of have a little life right now and might be able to sneak into the wild card. There's a lot of baseball left, but we've got some interesting things happen, even though we're in a rebuild. But, Danny, it's great to hook up with you. Boy, you got a lot of stuff going on in Wisconsin. Let's keep in touch between now and November, okay?
Absolutely, my friend.
When I leave here at 6 o'clock, I often tune into, most days I do, I tune into Fox to see what Laura's talking about because she usually has, well, first of all, 90% of the time, Eric Schmidt's a guest, so I like to see my friend Senator Schmidt, maybe 85% of the time. He's a regular. He's on there, you know, every other night or something like that. We love him, though. He does a great job, but I tease because I love. But Laura had a guest on Sue last night. This was quite something. This should get more attention. Samira Hardcastle is her name. I'm going to play a little audio here. She was named in Tennessee 25-26 Teacher of the Year at John F. Kennedy Middle School in Antioch, Tennessee. but she has submitted her letter of resignation after 8 years of teaching art in the Metro Nashville Public Schools, because what she says is that district leaders asked her to fabricate grades for a parent who sat in the office for hours until her daughter's failing grades were changed. So here's Samira talking with Laura last night.
So I gave the child what she earned. She didn't attempt a project. I gave her another opportunity to retake it. She didn't do the retake. And on the last day of her being in my 9-week class, you know, she broke down crying and said I had to change her grade. I said, you got the grade you earned. Her mom came up there, complained, and ultimately, the district sided with the parent and passed her. She got A-B honor roll.
Not only passed her, but she got A-B honor roll? How
about
that?
Are you kidding me?
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
One thing you think parents could do right now for their elementary school students, what would it be? Would it have something to do with this, the phone?
It could. I think in general, just holding them accountable, whether it's behavior, whether it's, you know, reading every day, whether it's putting the phone away, whether it is not using AI and focusing on, you know, using your brain. So I think that accountability is a huge thing that parents need to focus on with their children. Let them fail. They learn from those mistakes. When you just hand them what they're supposed to get, they don't learn anything, and it develops a sense of entitlement.
Samira, will you teach elsewhere?
I will not be a teacher ever again. I just own my own art business, Artwork by Samira, but I will never go back to teaching.
Yeah, it's kind of sad. And, you know, there are people that are trying, you know, from the school district, they all want to, you know, CYA, right?
Yeah.
But there's another teacher in the same district, Diana Willis is her name. She's a math teacher, and she said the same thing happened with her. She rejected directives to change failing grades, and she didn't get fired. In this case, again, I guess what she's alleging is that the administrator, and she's not even saying the principal of the school, it went beyond that, right? So whoever was in the office with this particular student was just doing everything they can to make sure that their daughter somehow, you know, didn't fail that class. And
that is disgusting.
I guess they just gave up and they caved in. Well, and this comes on the heels of, and I didn't play this the other day, it went viral, but there was a professor in California, I think it was a professor, but it was a guy, he might have been a high school teacher, because he was literally weeping openly about the number of kids who can't even read.
Correct.
And they're getting sent off from high school.
So we're just going to perpetuate that? This makes no sense.
It makes zero sense whatsoever. And I think it's happening a lot more than we even think. You know, some of the figures that I see when it comes to, you know, what percentage of younger people in this country can actually read are stunning.
Oh.
They really are. Now, obviously, some of that's because of immigration, but the fact that you can go through high school and somehow get to the point where you can't read, that's very foreign to most of us.
Yes.
And I don't know that I could ever explain
it. Oh, my gosh. I can't imagine saying to my dad, oh, you know what? I really didn't work in this class. They're going to fail me. Can you see if you can get me?
Well,
what?
You know what? That's actually a good point. Because, look,
a lot
of this, and this is what happens. Look, I'm just going to tell you, this daughter of mine is 11 years old, right? She's at this little orientation at Rockwood South yesterday, right? The first time. School starts on next Monday.
First time in middle school.
There's already drama.
Yes.
But what I can tell you is, from observational drama, and, you know, people can say this about me too, as a parent, but when the kids are doing things, they're getting it from the parents. And you can see the behaviors and some of the atrocious behaviors that some of the parents have that their kids pick up on, unfortunately. So in this case, you know, it's hard to blame the kid because it was the parent that didn't say, hey, you failed the class. It's your own damn fault.
Yes.
They beg for forgiveness.
Get more at 971talk.com.